Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, I had another week of theater that included three starkly different productions. One, an old, spelled O-L-D-E, farce brought back to life at the Irish Rep. Another, a new piece at Playwrights Horizons by a popular playwright. That one is about ghosts and storytelling. And finally, on Broadway, though one of its most unique offerings, is a sort of play, sort of concert, sort of performance art piece brought to us by the constantly surprising David Byrne. Well, let's start there. Now, most of us know Byrne from Talking Heads fame. The Broadway show is called American Utopia, but its subtitle could be Talking Brains. He walks out on what is a bare stage, in bare feet as well, holding a plastic brain, and explains Byrne style that we are born with millions of cells that go away as we age. Are we getting stupider and stupider, he asks. Well, David Byrne certainly is not. Now, I confess I was not a Talking Heads follower, but I saw another show he produced at the Public a few years back called Here Lies Love, which was incredibly clever and enjoyable. Now, he wasn't in that one, but he is on the stage throughout American Utopia, and his devoted fans love every minute. All ages here, by the way. My millennial son is the one who asked if he could see it. And I believe he appreciated it even more than I did. There's something about Byrne's offhanded wit and observations and sentiments many of the young and restless clearly relate to, like enjoying being with people, but eventually wondering, quote, when are they going to leave? Byrne is not alone up there, by the way. A troupe of 12, similarly clad in gray and shoeless, musicians and dancers move along with him in a clever and intoxicating style. And this is legit, if not your usual, stage choreography. Former Tony-nominated director Alex Timbers is listed as consulting producer, but it's clear this is David Byrne's vision from start to finish. The show hints at political feelings. We're all immigrants up here, he notes, and we couldn't do the show without them. But in a good-hearted, let's all keep talking and at least stay involved kind of way. In fact, there's a voter registration booth in the lobby. Unfortunately, I am what I am, Byrne says at one point. Well, there are a lot of folks who wouldn't have it any other way. Finally, to get back to the brain reference, well, it's a recurring theme in the show, being willing to open up our minds, to listen and continue to learn, so we keep those cells charging as long as possible. Which brings me to my second show, The Thin Place at Playwrights Horizons. Now, this 90-minute thing could almost have been created by David Byrne. The playwright is Lucas Nath, that's spelled H-N-A-T-H, who seems to be offering something new to New Yorkers every season. He's the man behind Doll's House 2 and Hillary Clinton, you'll recall. Well, this one is hard to describe. Basic details include it too is played on a bare stage. The lights don't even go off in the theater for the first chunk. And the overriding subject is what lies beyond, where we go when we die. Not a new subject, but this is nothing if not unique. Four excellent actors take on the challenging roles. Perhaps most notable is Randy Danson, who portrays a medium who may or may not be for real. Emily Cass McDonald, she goes to see her to try to reach a dead grandmother and missing mother. And there are two noisy intruders played by Trini Sandoval and Kelly McAndrew. Essentially, this is a play about storytelling, which is, let's not forget, what theater ultimately is. Yes, there's talk of demons, a touch of magic, and even a dose of politics here, too. The Thin Place actually shares a lot of the David Byrne philosophy, that by truly listening, we can understand people so well we can actually get inside their heads. Don't you know that you can have such an open mind that your brain falls out, asks one character? For an odd little show like this, there are some pretty profound observations and questions. You meddle with people's minds, one person says to the medium. You take their money and you tell them lies. Well, maybe, but we are left asking, well, is that okay if it's offering real comfort for those in need? The show is about suspending belief when need be and telling those stories. Hey, don't we suspend that belief every time we walk into a live theater? And does it really take much more than four people on a bare stage with the occasional creepy sound effect to take us to another place, thin or not? Now, the show, I might say, has received wildly mixed reactions, not only from critics, but audience members. The woman next to me, a seasoned theater goer, called it terrible. Well, it ain't that, but it ain't for everyone. My final show, also probably not for everyone. Actually, none of these three are for everyone. They're for special taste, which I like. The final show is at the Irish Rep. It is called London Assurance. It's written by one Dion Boukico. I don't know. It's a long French name. Who apparently wrote this complex and very funny play in 1841 when he was a mere lad of 20. It was a big hit, but later the esteemed playwright, who was also a performer, squandered his wealth, declared bankruptcy, and became the center of a scandal when his wife disappeared. Well, this play, too, disappeared for almost a century when it was rediscovered, I believe, by the Royal Shakespeare Company, when a young actress named Judy Dench played the ingenue. Anyway, now it is on stage at the Irish Rep, directed by Charlotte Moore, who has been the longtime and dedicated artistic director of that much-respected company on West 22nd Street. Now, there's no need to give too much away about this production, except that a company of 10 is absolutely first-rate. The sets and costumes, the latter sent from London, by the way, are delicious and clever, and somehow this small venue takes us back to another time when the plot points include an older man who is supposed to marry a woman some 40 years his junior. They each fall for other people over a brief stay in a wealthy estate, and, well, all that Oscar Wilde-ish kind of stuff. It's very funny. Your wife ran away with your best friend? Yes, and I miss him. And it could be rather insightful. It's an undeniable fact, notes a character here. Plain people always praise the beauties of the brain. And doesn't that fit well with this week's theme of our three shows? Anyway, Jill, yet another week of a wide variety of entertainments. I really can't think of a time when there was so much off-Broadway being offered. Anyway, as the year is coming to a close and a new season is hearkening.
So the interesting thing will be to see what stays off where it is doing well or is transferred. Are there still theater? Yeah. Is there still a theater crunch?
There is a theater crunch. A lot is opening. I can't think of anything that's off Broadway right now.
It should be.
That would move on Broadway. I mean, you know, Lucas Nath is a hot playwright, but they're not going to put a 90-minute ghost story, I don't think, in a big theater. So I can't think of anything off right now. That has happened in the past. I mean, the Lehman trilogy is coming to Broadway, and that started, it started at the Armory, but that's certainly away from Broadway. But it's just a lot of stuff going on. There's no way to keep up with the little things around town. The big ones are just starting now to go into just starting their previews. You know, that kicks in around February, as you know.
And did you say you had people in town who were going to a preview last week? Or have they not appeared yet?
I know people who have seen West Side Story in previews. You know, that's got an all-time record of previews. It literally has 6 weeks in previews. I don't think there's ever been a show that's had that long in town on a Broadway stage. Not out of town,
right?
Exactly, but on a Broadway stage, they obviously know they. It's apparently very, very unusual production. You know, I hate to.
No, we're not going to mention it. We're not going to really talk about it prior because that people need room to do their what so many people have forgotten. This is a cri de coeur just in general is what goes into something, whatever it is, whether it's a cake or a pie or a show. People have become so focused on the external quote, product, that they lose sight of the entire process to make it. And I'm not saying that every pie is as good as every other or every show is as good as every other. But without process, you're doomed, So
that's... Absolutely. Matter of fact, I was with an actor this week. I took him with me to see the one of playwrights. And we talked about, he had just done a play over the summer. He's done many, many plays. And I asked him about the preview process. He said, oh my God. He said, it's the most important thing. He said, until we start hearing an audience, what they laugh at, where they start looking at the wall. He said, that's when it really all begins. And you can imagine on with an audacious, a really audacious attempt of something different, you know, as this West Side Story will be, and others as well, you know. By the way, you're talking about a shortage of theaters or whatever. Did you read about what's going on with Beetlejuice and that one?
No, I missed that. What's the...
Yeah, that's a big scandal right now. Beetlejuice was not doing well. Remember, over the summer, I kept saying I thought that would be on the endangered list, and it wasn't doing well. Suddenly, for whatever reason, it picked up, and it's been making money. But the theater had been promised to the Music Man, and they need to get in before Beetlejuice has time to finish a run and make back its investors' money. It's a complicated story, but it's being debated heavily now among lawyers and investors and producers, and I don't know, and I don't think it's an easy show to move.
But not that just that, typically, I can't say typically, but in the past, sometimes there was something that was moved and it didn't resonate as well, even if it could be moved. It was meticulously moved. I'm too old now to remember which show it was, but it didn't have the same, sorry about this word, but je ne sais quoi. Shutting it, moving it, it just wrecked the momentum.
Now that, absolutely, I'm sure that's the fear here. And Beetlejuice, I have not seen it, and nor do I have interest in seeing it, I'm sorry to say, but I know it's a complicated piece, and I know there's a lot of trickery and a lot of stagecraft going on there. And that's probably not easy to transfer. And I think the problem is shortage of theaters. There are not a lot of stages. So that's one that's going to be interesting. If I were an investor in that show, and there are many of them, I'm sure they're very concerned. They put a lot of money in, and apparently it cannot recoup their money until, you know, a certain amount of time, and that's about when Music Man probably starts previews there, you know, a month and a half in advance. So that could be, you know. Anyway, it's an interesting thing to watch. It doesn't seem urgent right now, but again, for people with money involved, it feels very urgent.
And we will see what happens. So what is it? Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. And actually, next week I'm going to talk about some interesting questions. I thought it might be a fun way to end the year in a way. Just some questions you might have about certain things. Things that I was asking about. Can you change somebody's choreography? Can you change somebody's direction? Can you change, what happens when you change theaters? You know, just some fun theater facts. I thought it might be interesting. It means I have to do some homework though during the week. So I better get going.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.